Would you introduce yourselves, please?
Hello, this is Debbie Peterson.
This is Susanna Hoffs.
And this is Victoria and Teresa Peterson Cowsill.
You had to add the cows. There you go.
You had to
add all of this stuff. All right, so we were just talking about the fact that the last time we met at South by Southwest, that was already 5 friggin' years ago. So time is flying a little too fast. We need to stop that right now just on principle. But 30 years, which what's really interesting about 30 years when you're me is you tell people, oh, I'm interviewing the Bengals, and their jaws are like, really? Really? No. It's more like, that's so cool. You're forming a band, and the conversation happens. What do you say? Why does the world need this band 30 years ago? What did you say? Who wants to take that one?
Well, first of all, we were in our very early 20s. I don't think Debbie was actually 20 yet, or maybe you were. Annette was 19. And when you're 20, 21, 22 years old, you are not concerned with things about what does the world need now, other than love, sweet love. All you know is that you have this burning desire to do something, and nobody's going to stop you from doing it. And it was one of the questions when Debbie and I met Susanna, and we sat and we played for a while, and then we sat down in her kitchen, and we said, okay, because Debbie and I had already had a band. We had, with our best friend in high school, and then with another young woman we had met and everything, and my best friend ended up getting her history degree and getting married. You know, I didn't want to have another situation where we were going to get all excited about someone and then have them, you know, decide that they were going to become a psychiatrist.
I was fresh from UC Berkeley. Right. You might have worried that I was going to try for an MFA or something like that.
No, because we had the conversation I said, what do you want? What is your goal? What is your vision for this? Because I knew what mine was. I knew what Debbie's was.
I think I either said world domination or the toppermost of the poppermost. I made some reference like, this is not a hobby. This is not a whim. I think we were measuring how deep all our burning desires were, and we all were like matching in that way. And it was the three of us. And apparently I was wearing an Inside Out Shangri-La shirt.
Now that's perfect.
I remember that.
I remember that
and
too.
Purple suede, my mom's old purple suede pumps or something, and black jeans.
Trashy vaudeville.
Both
of this process of trying to find a band member, and it's anyone who's out there.
All you do is watch The Commitments, right?
Come on. It's really, really hard.
Right?
And it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. It's just,
I want to be a drummer. I like to jam.
The other thing was the song we jammed on, and these guys taught it to me, was White Rabbit. We're sitting in the perfect place to talk about the Jefferson Airport. So I was like, it was all sorts of stuff like that that just kept happening that was too good to be true. So we just got married that night.
The Colors, the Supersonic Bangs, you know, Garage in 1981. So I filled in all the blanks. Yeah. But what I don't know that much about, because I was in New York during that time, was the Paisley Underground. Because that was a whole... Now, that really sounds like the L.A. Summer of Love that happened in the 70s, like a decade later, right?
In the early 80s. It was really 82, 83.
We were part of it. It was named from...
Yeah.
I mean, we were really in the thick of that.
Michael Quercio was, we credit him with coming
from
up with that name
o'clock.
From the 3 o'clock.
A great name.
It is. Yeah. And he was right. And there was this a sense of community. There was a group of bands. We were all, you know, influenced by the 60s or in love with the 60s, or some of us completely obsessed with the 60s. Like, there were bands in the club who would not play an amp if it was, you know, manufactured after 1966.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the Unclaimed.
I was just right to the Unclaimed.
The vintage clothing, the exact vintage clothing.
But Mike Quercio used to make me mix cassettes back in the cassette day. And we'd be on our little van rides from one club gig to another, or I don't even know how we were getting around. I think at that point we had a van. I would listen to all these songs, like really rare 60s stuff. We were all obsessed with all that stuff.
So, you know, but the thing about the 60s and where you came from and what you love is that everything old is new again. And so do you think that's a reason that you can put out an album like the new one, which we're about to get to because we have to hype the record, you know, which you know, the word, I've seen reviews and I've played it on the air and I get these emails saying, this is timeless, you know. And so, but again, it's not timeless in the fact that it's still you guys doing what you want to do today, and the sound has changed, but there are certain things, obviously the Rickenbacker, obviously the vocals, and of course, and the reverb, but number one, the harmonies.
Yeah.
When the harmonies come up, there is no question, no matter what song it is, going through all those songs, it's this band.
Yeah.
And you guys own that. And that used to be owned in the 60s. But I really can't name a couple of bands today that own that. There's a few. Yeah, Fleet Foxes, there's a few, but it's pretty rare.
There's kind of a resurgence of it, like Fleet Foxes and a couple other bands.
But I don't think they start going into the sort of bop-bop, almost. We really lean towards the cheesy. And we do a little bit of the Muzak, almost the
Swingle Singers.
Right. Yeah, we love all that.
That's all cool.
It's all cool again. I mean, that kind of stuff.
Well, it's done with a little bit of irony.
We definitely do it with irony. No kidding, irony, for sure.
Tongue is in cheek.
But unlike a lot of bands, both the oldsters will stick around and the hipsters will go with you. They won't turn around and go, "Ooh, these guys aren't, these guys aren't cool anymore."
Yeah.
Okay, so we have to go to Mr. Sweet. But you go to his house, right, and you kind of went through a ton of, what I read is a ton of material, even stuff that went all the way back to way back that magically found its way on this album. So you kind of did an audit, though, to really go through a lot of material to figure out what you wanted to put on this first record in so many years, right? You were kind of very analytical about it, right?
Sort of. I mean, we did go through a lot of cassettes.
We did.
We went through, like, literally boxes of cassettes and started. And at my house, we started showing Debbie, "Oh my God, look what I just found from 1990. And she came up with
just dug some old songs out and that I haven't listened to in a while. And I thought, check with the girls, see what they think about it. And luckily, they liked it. And it was ball and chain.
We sort of threw a lot of stuff out there, and we sort of kind of A&R'd that, Matthew really was like, whatever you guys want to do, he has that same thing. It's like when he hears us singing together and playing, he just kind of goes, he gets all excited.
Cool.
It's all cool. he's very much the cheerleader to just get us from our slight fear of recording again. Because
you're going to pick a cheerleader, though. Right? If you're going to pick a pop cheerleader, Matthew Sweet would be. I mean, I don't really want to see him in the cheerleading outfit.
I was just going to say, everything but the
visual worries me a little bit.
I just got the visual. Thank you. That's good.
But couldn't you see him in that?
Yeah. Like the mascot wearing a cat suit or something.
Oh,
like the
we
bear.
Came up with that.
I think
we need a PR photo of him.
Letterman jacket?
Yeah.
Oh my God, what a concept.
One of the quotes I read is that you literally put on your rose-colored glasses from the 60s.
Oh, did I say that?
Yeah, I think you said
that. I probably did. Yeah, I mean, I think we wanted to do a record that would be fun to play live, because we do play live, albeit mostly under the radar all these years, in between records. Now we're sort of... people know we have a new record and all that. But the other thing was that we wanted to just shamelessly have on those rose-colored glasses and just dive back into our past as L.A. girls growing up with all this great heritage of music in L.A.,
But that being said, I don't think we came in saying, we're going to make a 60s record. That was not really the point. The point was, as we were going, the process, because we really thought we just had this very disjointed collection of songs from, from the past 15 years, in a way. And some of them are brand new, but many of them were not. And it was kind of an odd thing. And as we were doing it in the process, that's when we started let's just... because real crunch guitar here, and then tambourine, we gotta have a lead tambourine there, and then when the vocals came in,
gotta go of course,
that
coming from you, exactly.
Yeah. Thing, but we were, I think we were consciously wanting to go back to almost all over the place in our early kind of days as a kind of our early sound.
Do it yourself bangles.
That's it, do it yourself bangles.
Because we were producing it. It was our baby.
That's what we do when we're left to our own devices.
But you went as far as to, and again, trivia, even put it out on Down Kitty.
There was a guy named John Kirby who comes to our gigs sometimes. He's a Brit. And he had some connection. I wish I knew exactly what it was, but he at one time hung out with the guys in Led Zeppelin. And And it may have even been one of the guys who came with Robert Plant to see us in our early days, you know, playing weird little clubs in, I don't know, where were those clubs? Somewhere, not in London, though, but they were like little...
Up north.
North or, and yeah. bizarre. The kind of places where St. Bob used to come see us.
Absolutely, like college towns.
College towns.
Like
yeah.
Sheffield.
Yeah, those kind of places.
Right.
Anyway, we're cut to 30 years later, or whatever it was, a few years back, 28 years later.
Yeah.
And we're doing one of our Vegas gigs, you know, one of our, you know, I was talking about Under the Radar. Well, you know, every year we do a gig in Vegas, which is kind of hip now when you think about it. It used to be considered like,
it's
God forbid you ever.
Swanky.
Yeah. And he's there and he starts telling me about this really cool all-girl band called the McKinley Sisters, and they're Scottish and all this stuff. And Scottish, that's what I was trying to say.
If they're Scottish,
yes.
Then they're cool.
It's not Scottish, it's Scottish.
So I put the CD in my car and I was like, whoa, this is the coolest thing I've ever heard, this band. So I just started listening to it repeatedly for months, and then we're up at Matthew's one day, and I was like, God, I gotta play this song for Vicky and Debbie. It's so cool. And Matthew and I just played it, and then you guys all loved it, and that was
it.
It was like, let's track
it.
That was easy.
And you know, it's amazing.
Paige played guitar on it, but we didn't know that
on that track.
That's crazy.
Not on ours. I wish.
Actually, Vicky paid
the
guitar.
And I guess the decade had already passed for you and Matt to do "Open My Eyes," so therefore the Bangles got it instead of "Under the Covers" got it, right?
It also was in our set early on. We used to do it.
Yeah,
a long time. We hadn't done it in a long time.
Yeah,
it kind of popped up in the conversation of. What else should we track? I think I did. I said, let's do that one. That will be fun.
So the other song for me that hit me, and I kind of, now that I read the story, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's too good, is obviously Anna Lee.
Oh, yeah.
So it's what you said, and I want you to talk about it a little bit, which is the idea that this song is about the fact that, yes, you've got the beaches and the sunshine and the beauty, but it's also was important to you to communicate more to people about what L.A. really is, not good, bad, but just what it is, right?
Well, I think that concept, the shiny exterior with the, you know, something slightly rotten underneath, is kind of the thread that runs through the record, and that comes up in songs, you know, like Under a Cloud, What a Life, and Lay Yourself Down. But the song, the Anna Lee, Sweetheart of the Sun, the title track, as it were, was actually inspired by the Sheila Weller book, Girls Like Us.
Right.
And that's sort of slightly different take. That's more historical, looking at Laurel Canyon. We were talking about exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was inspired specifically by a photograph in that book of Toni Stern,
yeah.
who was Carole King's lyricist and this incredible woman. She still is an incredible woman and an artist. And so that was, she was sort of our vision. She was in our brain when we were talking about, we were also talking about feminism and about girls.
About girls today. And what role models do they have? I mean, look at young Kate here. I mean, we're talking about this whole new generation of young women and girls.
Do you really want to be Kim Kardashian?
No. Oh, God. No. Upsets me. I mean,
it upsets me.
But, you know, okay, sure there's nice. Always been a Marilyn Monroe and a...
Yeah, God. No, it is who you got. Yeah.
You know what? We had Joni and Bonnie and Carol women role models and
Patty Smith.
We even knew about Jane Goodall and Margaret Mead.
Right.
I mean and Marie Curie and people
Curie.
Who had done
very
amazing
women
things.
Very strong.
Wasn't Kim Kardashian, you know, I'm sorry, no offense, Kim. I'm sure you're a very nice girl.
I'm not so sure, but
the culture is so corrupt and degenerated.
The other thing that's interesting is that you can put out an album, you can come back, and next thing you know, you're on Jimmy Kimmel instantaneously, which I watched the other night. You know, you're on Kate watches Dancing with the Stars, right? And you're on Dancing with the Stars. So there's really something to be said for being you, that you can come back after all these years. And it does kind of, I imagine it makes it all worthwhile that you say, yeah, okay, we've done this long, and we're still at this level of reality, because there's a lot of bands that could try to quote, and I know you've never been gone. I want to make that, we should make that clear, that you took a little hiatus in the 90s, but other than that, for the past 11 years, you've never been gone, right?
Actually, to be honest, it took me by surprise. I honestly thought we made this little record without a label, on our own, paid for it, did it in our home studios. Like, we're very kind of relaxed about it for the most part. I didn't think it would suddenly launch us back in a kind of way. I mean, I'm not saying that in an overblown way, but I was surprised, honestly, by all the great reviews. Happily surprised, don't get me wrong, thrilled. But then all these TV shows and things, it was kind of a little bit
That's wow. Big stuff. And I'm not saying, I mean, you are a big band. We're not fooling around here. You're an iconic band, but still, it's not that many bands that get to do that quite that way. It doesn't happen instantaneously. So speaking of doing, Susanna, I mean, you know, a solo album with Mitchell Froom, you know, it's like, again, can you do things simple? No.
Yeah, he's my neighbor. I just happened to run into him and said...
That's kind of a nice neighbor.
Yeah, I know. I just happened to run into him and I said, I've just written like 10 songs in the last 2 months. It's like, I want to hear them. That was like recording an album in like a week.
So the last thing we do a thing called a musical sandwich. And it's my way, now with you, I don't have to introduce anybody to you. With new bands, it's a great way to introduce people to a band sound. But it's more an opportunity for me to play the tracks from the new record. And I usually do it as a club. So there's a song on either end and a song in the middle. But then I want you each to pick four or five other songs by anybody else.